Today is Thursday, December 2nd, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Carol Van Dam in Washington. The top U.S. diplomat warns Russia if it invades Ukraine, there will be serious consequences.
As we've made very clear in recent weeks, we have deep concerns about Russia's plans for renewed aggression against Ukraine.
The Biden administration supports WHO efforts to establish a global agreement on pandemic preparedness, but will it make a difference?
Anything that comes out of this process is very unlikely to make any change to our current environment and the current pandemic response.
And the COVID-19 death toll in Hungary reaches a high not seen since a devastating wave last year. We'll have these stories and more next. U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken met face-to-face with Russia's Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov Thursday in Sweden, where he warned Lavrov that if Russia invades Ukraine, there will be severe consequences. He also urged Russia to seek a diplomatic way to ease tensions.
As we've made very clear in recent weeks, we have deep concerns about Russia's plans for renewed aggression against Ukraine. That would move us in exactly the opposite direction, and it's simply not in anyone's interest. That's not just our concern. It's a concern that is shared by many in Europe, and I think Sergei has heard that expressed over the last 24 hours here in Stockholm. We have a strong, ironclad commitment to the sovereignty and territorial integrity of Ukraine. The best way to avert a crisis is through diplomacy.
Speaking through an interpreter, Lavrov said his government also thinks diplomacy is the way forward.
I have no doubts that the only way out of today's crisis, which is indeed quite tense, is actually to seek the balance of interests. And I hope this is what we are going to do today.
Blinken met separately with both the Ukrainian and foreign ministers in Stockholm to discuss the heightened border tensions. After his meeting with Lavrov, Blinken told reporters Ukraine is in no way posing a threat that justifies a Russian military intervention and that it is now on Russia to de-escalate. Blinken said the United States is prepared to work with Russia and Ukraine to support a diplomatic resolution. He added that U.S. President Joe Biden and Russian President Vladimir Putin, U.S. President Joe Biden and Russian President Vladimir Putin may have an opportunity to speak directly in the near future. At the start of his talks with Ukrainian Foreign Minister Dmytro Kuleba, Blinken reiterated Washington's concerns over a buildup of Russian troops on the border. Kiev says Russia has amassed more than 90,000 troops near their shared border. Moscow accuses Kiev of pursuing its own military buildup. It has dismissed as inflammatory suggestions it is preparing for an attack on Ukraine and has defended its right to deploy troops on its own territory as it sees fit. UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres has called travel restrictions imposed on southern African countries by close to 50 nations travel apartheid. Speaking at a news conference after the 5th United Nations and African Union conference, Guterres and AU Commission Chairperson Moussa Faki denounced the restrictions that are aimed at preventing the spread of Omicron, the new COVID-19 variant. VOA senior analyst Mohamed El-Shenawy spoke with Ahmed Fathi, a UN correspondent and global affairs analyst, about Guterres' sharp criticism of the international community, the background of the travel restrictions decision, and how long they may be around.
First, the Secretary General was expressing frustration, so as the chairperson of the African Commission at the African Union Commission. There is a sense and a strong feeling in many African countries that they have been discriminated against, that the measure was punitive in the case of South Africa, although they have shared in great transparency their findings immediately. The feeling of being betrayed by the allies, not just the United States, but the European Union, and there is almost 50 countries that have imposed travel restrictions. The second point is that the American and the European view has been focused, and this has been neglected by many of the media outlets, was that the United States is not punishing South Africa. The United States is buying time. Its health system gets clogged with overflow of cases. Till now, there is a great deal of uncertainty and lack of scientific data to tell us how this new variant is evolving and developing, since what we know so far is that it's fastly spread. There was no mention in the afore of all the commentaries and the interjections I've heard over the past 4 days mentioning anything about the 600 passengers who were on board two flights heading to Schiphol in the Netherlands. And when they landed, they had to be immediately tested and quarantined for some of them. They found 61 positive cases among the 600 passengers, although they had to submit a form of testing before they can board the plane. So this is number two. There was no even approach. The other point is that there is no time frame. Although the European Union, when they first introduced the ban, it was for a period of 2 weeks. The United States and the UK followed suit in that direction. The other countries are not sure what the criteria. Some countries resolved to close its border entirely, like Japan, Israel, and Morocco. But where we are heading with this direction, that is going to be dependent on what the data will be in our hand within the next 10 days or so.
Vaccine equity was another topic that is receiving great attention from both chiefs of the UN and African Union, where to date only 6% of Africans have received one sort or another of vaccination. How can this current situation be fixed in the short and medium terms to bring more vaccines into the African continent?
The developed world, and namely starting from the G20 summit last June in the United Kingdom, have pledged to provide in excess of 2 billion doses of vaccine. The United States on its own pledge 1 billion doses. This was by the time when we were only getting two shots of vaccine, so it can vaccinate 500 people just as a gift from one country. The problem with the vaccine distribution is that there is, in many countries, there is no infrastructure, there is no trained personnel to administer the vaccine, and there is no storage facility. So even if you have availability of vaccine, you cannot even deliver it to them. In the case of South Africa, for example, South Africa enjoys one of the highest vaccination rates in the continent, which reach about 25% of its population. There is also a resentment from South Africa to receive more vaccine. Last shipment they received from the United States, totaling over the past few weeks, 8 million doses. They have not requested any more vaccine to administer because they have not yet fully administered the 8 million doses. That's only from one country. The United States provides vaccination much bigger than the entire world combined is providing to the least developed countries. So there is not even an equity in the developed versus the least developed. You can have vaccination, but if you don't have the infrastructure, then it becomes redundant at some point. There is a trend now going into starting manufacturing the vaccine in Africa. This is not going to be with an immediate outcome because it will take investments and time to finish from construction. So it will depend at the end on what's the capabilities of the factories, the pharmaceutical company, to keep on producing vaccines.
That was Ahmed Fathi, a UN correspondent and global affairs analyst. He was speaking with my colleague Mohammed Al-Shanawi. Amid growing concerns over the new Omicron COVID-19 variant and the first case now being identified in the U.S., the Biden administration is supporting efforts by the World Health Organization to establish a new international agreement on future pandemic preparedness and response, the so-called Pandemic Treaty. But as White House Bureau Chief Patsy Wittek-Squara reports, public health experts are pessimistic of the outcome.
At least 55 countries have implemented travel restrictions aimed at delaying the outbreak of the Omicron COVID-19 variant. Chief Medical Advisor to the U.S. President, Dr. Anthony Fauci.
Confirmed cases as of yesterday was 205 in 18 countries, and just this morning, that's gone up to 226 in 20 countries. And I think you're going to expect to see those numbers change rapidly.
As countries scramble to ramp up vaccinations, the Biden administration is supporting efforts by the World Health Organization to establish a new international agreement on future pandemic preparedness and response, said White House Press Secretary Jen Psaki to VOA on board Air Force One Tuesday.
The United States is committed to working with member states to take forward the recent recommendations of the Working Group on Preparedness and Response. That includes developing a new WHO convention agreement or other international instrument and making agreements to improve the effectiveness and agility of international health regulations.
The U.S. had initially opposed the inclusion of language that would have made the so-called pandemic treaty, proposed in March by about 24 world leaders, legally binding. The treaty is expected to be ready in May 2024. Krishna Udayakumar is the founding director of the Duke Global Health Innovation Center at Duke University.
Anything that comes out of this process is very unlikely to make any change to our current environment and the current pandemic response. We're looking at probably a 2 to 3 year process to get to a real treaty that may or may not actually then go into effect.
Meanwhile, humanitarian organizations say that a pandemic treaty should include a waiver of patents on vaccines, the so-called TRIPS waiver at the World Trade Organization.
Vaccinate the world! Free the vaccine!
After initially opposing the waiver, the U.S. announced its support of it in April, leaving the U.K., Switzerland, and the European Union as holdouts. But many are skeptical that the Biden administration is putting any real diplomatic weight on the issue. Yuan Chong-Hu is senior legal and policy advisor for Doctors Without Borders Access Campaign.
We do observe the lacking of more proactive leadership from U.S. Since it's changed the position.
According to research by Duke University, almost 2 years into the pandemic, the world continues to struggle to enact an effective and equitable response. Commitments and pledges remain largely unfulfilled, including the goal of achieving 40% vaccination coverage in every country by the end of 2021 and 70% coverage by mid-2022. Patsy Widakuswara, VOA News.
The White House is mulling new travel restrictions and tightening of testing windows as it ramps up efforts to contain the spread of the COVID Omicron variant. The U.S. is working toward requiring that all air travelers to the country be tested for COVID-19 within a day before boarding their flights. That's up from the current 3 days. On Wednesday, White House correspondent Anita Powell told my colleague Chinedu Afore that the World Health Organization warned that blanket travel bans are complicating the sharing of lab samples from South Africa that could help some scientists understand the new variant.
Learned a few things about this new Omicron variant. First of all, we did learn that it has made landfall in the United States. There has been one case reported in California, and so far that patient has mild symptoms. The patient had traveled from South Africa, reported symptoms immediately. This patient had been at least double vaccinated. I don't think it's clear whether that person had had a booster or not. I don't think they have. And so far, that person seems to be doing okay. This was what we were told by Dr. Fauci this afternoon at the White House. That's the first piece. The second piece is that later, President Biden is going to lay out a complete strategy for the winter for dealing with COVID. And this is almost certainly, definitely going to address this new variant. I want to also stress a few things about this variant that we heard from Dr. Fauci this afternoon at the White House, and that is that doctors in the United States simply do not yet know how dangerous, how dire, how strong, so to speak, this variant is. They do know that there's an unusual number of mutations on the spike protein, which makes it more transmissible. They do not yet know if that makes it more deadly. And they say that they're going to need about 3 weeks to study this and to make some kind of determination, which is why the overarching line that has come out of the White House from the president on down is that this is a cause for concern. This is not a cause for panic. And that's what we know so far.
It's almost a given that the administration would tinker with either travel rules or travel or some kind of action by the government to try to protect the American population. Would that be part of what President Biden will be discussing?
Well, let's just back up and note that the president has already restricted travel from several southern African countries where the variant was first detected. That includes Botswana, Mozambique, Lesotho, Swatini, South Africa, Zimbabwe. I believe that's most of the list. I think Malawi as well. And so that is the first step that they have taken to buy time so that the U.S. can prepare and figure out what this variant is all about and what needs to be done. So, yes, the administration has already imposed travel rules. And is it likely that more will come? Well, I don't want to preempt the president or predict the president, but we will probably learn more about that.
That was White House correspondent Anita Powell speaking with my colleague Chinedu Afore. The number of daily COVID-19 deaths in Hungary has reached a high not seen since a devastating wave last spring. AP correspondent Charles de Ledesma reports.
The grim record is part of a recent sharp rise in pandemic indicators that has given the country the highest per capita death rate in the world, as many of the Central European countries' neighbours have instituted lockdowns and other measures. Hungary's government has opted to keep its economy open and has emphasised vaccination as the only means of effectively combating the pandemic, while a mass vaccination drive that began last week has been able to bump up the numbers of vaccinated Hungarians. A surge in new cases and deaths continues as the number of daily mortalities reached 218 on Thursday, the highest since April 16. I'm Charles de Ledesma.
You're listening to VOA News. VOA's International Edition continues. I'm Carol Van Dam. Protests echoed in Washington on Wednesday on both sides of America's decades-old debate over abortion as the U.S. Supreme Court heard arguments on a state law that would restrict the practice. VOA's Carolyn Prosciutto reports the case could open the door to even further limits on abortion across the nation.
A challenge to abortion rights in America, with loud outdoor protests that could be heard inside the court. The Supreme Court Wednesday considered a Mississippi state law that bans most abortions after 15 weeks of pregnancy. The burning question now, will justices overturn the landmark 1973 Roe v. Wade decision that found a constitutional right to abortion? Kathy Renna was at the protest.
This is the greatest challenge to Roe versus Wade in decades.
The Mississippi law reduces the time frame when women can choose abortion. The Centers for Disease Control shows most all abortions, 92%, take place in the first 13 weeks of pregnancy. That's before the Mississippi ban would apply. Krista Corbello and Savannah Ackerman want the court to restrict abortions.
I think abortion is kind of barbaric. It's an old practice. Abortion has been failing women and families for over 50 years.
I mean, any life saved is, you know, monumental, I think. Also, we're looking right at now putting the ban right about where every other country in the world does it.
A comment echoed by some in Congress. Republican Senator Steve Daines spoke ahead of Wednesday's court action.
We have the opportunity to end an extreme judicially imposed abortion regime that's aligned with nations such as China and North Korea. The United States is just one of seven nations that allows late-term abortions.
On the other side, those who feel women have the right to end pregnancies without government interference, like Democratic Representative Lois Frankel and protester Allison Turcos.
It's about politicians controlling women's bodies. It's about politicians taking away the personal decision of people to access the health care that they need.
I've never had an abortion myself, but there is a chance that I might need one day. And this is just about abortion justice and liberating abortion.
President Joe Biden backs the current law.
I support Roe v. Wade. I think it's a rational position to take.
Abortion opponents are counting on the Supreme Court's 6-3 conservative majority to deliver them a long-sought victory. During the oral arguments, Justice Sonia Sotomayor warned of damage to the court if it is seen as bending to political pressure.
If people actually believe that it's all political, how will we survive?
Upholding the Mississippi law would open the door to other states passing similarly restrictive laws. Chief Justice John Roberts. Upholding the Mississippi law would open the door to other states passing similarly restrictive laws. Chief Justice John Roberts.
Viability, it seems to me, doesn't have anything to do with choice. But if it really is an issue about choice, why is 15 weeks not enough time?
The Supreme Court will announce its decision next year. Carolyn Prosciutto, VOA News.
The United Nations is appealing for a record $41 billion to help 183 million of the world's most vulnerable people suffering from multiple crises, including poverty, hunger, conflict, and the impact of COVID-19. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva on the launch of the UN's Global Humanitarian Plan for 2022.
UN officials report an estimated 274 million people worldwide will require emergency aid and protection next year. This is a 17% increase from 2021. UN Emergency Relief Coordinator Martin Griffiths cites long-lasting conflicts, political instability, failing economies, climate crisis, and the COVID-19 pandemic as the main drivers of need.
There are 45 million people at risk of famine worldwide. 1% of humanity is displaced. And it would be no surprise to any of us that women and girls continue to suffer the most, just as civilians continue to suffer the most in war.
Griffiths says humanitarian aid can limit the worst consequences of existing and emerging crises. For example, he says UN aid brought back 500,000 people from the brink of famine in South Sudan this year. He says aid agencies delivered health care for 10 million people in Yemen and helped vaccinate millions of others against killer diseases in Myanmar. While aid does save lives, he notes it is no solution. He says humanitarian aid does not replace development assistance.
And we see in many countries, Afghanistan is just one most recent example, humanitarian assistance is not a remedy for the people of Afghanistan. It isn't a way to stabilize societies. One of the tragedies of the situation in Ethiopia that we see now as a result of that conflict is the erosion of the development gains of the last 40 years.
Griffiths considers the crisis in Ethiopia to be the most alarming in terms of immediate emergency needs. He notes 9 million people in northern Ethiopia's Amhara, Afar, and Tigray regions are seriously short of food. Of those, he says 5 million people in Tigray are suffering from acute hunger, with 400,000 on the verge of famine. He says he's very worried about the rebel military advance on the Ethiopian capital Addis Ababa, warning it will have a seismic effect on the rest of the country, engulfing the entire region. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Greeks who are over 60 years old and refuse coronavirus vaccinations could be hit with monthly fines of more than one quarter of their pensions. It's a get-tough policy that German politicians say will cost votes but save lives. In Israel, potential carriers of the new Omicron variant could be tracked by the nation's domestic security agency in seeming defiance of a Supreme Court ruling from the last go-round. Weekly protests in the Netherlands over the country's 5 p.m. lockdown and other new restrictions have prompted sporadic violence, even though the vast majority of citizens there appear to be accepting the new rules. After a hiatus that lasted several months, Iran has returned to the bargaining table in Vienna with the goal of salvaging its tattered nuclear deal with world powers. In the interim, Tehran has not slowed down the advances of its nuclear program, which has raised the stakes in negotiations key to smoothing tensions in the wider area of the Middle East. Iran's underground nuclear facility is a case in point. The International Atomic Energy Agency confirmed that Iran has begun loading 166 advanced centrifuges with uranium in the country. Iran has said it plans to enrich the centrifuges up to 20% purity. That's a short technical step toward approaching weapons-grade uranium at 90%. Brazil's economy contracted slightly in the 3 months before September. That's according to new government data, as rising inflation and a severe drought triggered a recession there. The 0.1% decline in Brazil's gross domestic product in the third quarter, as reported by official statistics, was below a median forecast for zero growth in a Reuters poll. Brazil's economic rebound from the COVID pandemic has sputtered as inflation surged into double digits, which forced the central bank to raise borrowing rates. Brazil is Latin America's biggest economy. Major League Baseball is facing its first work stoppage in 25 years when the league's collective bargaining agreement expired. Owners immediately locked out players in a move that threatens spring training and opening day. It is management's equivalent of a strike under federal labor law. Teams decided to force the expected confrontation during the offseason rather than risk a player walkout during the summer, which happened in 1994. This has been International Edition on the Voice of America. On behalf of the entire team, thank you so much for listening. For pictures, stories, videos, and more, follow VOA News on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. I'm Carol Van Damme in Washington.